Well, you couldn't eat any of those. The taste tests will make all the difference. They took the stairs to the kitchen. The Y ran a soup kitchen by day, where her mother hadn't yet volunteered, but surely would before long. But in the evenings, the kitchen was available to cooking classes. Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese, and French cooking each had a night. Cake decorating seemed backward and untrendy next to those cuisines. Think of all the calories. This is a dangerous hobby, Mom. Besides, you told Daddy you weren't going to eat any.
I lied.
Janie and her mother burst into giggles. There were 9 in the class. Janie was the only one under 40, and the only one not watching her pounds.
I'm going to like this, whispered her mother. Next to you, I'm the skinniest person here.
They learned on cardboard, not cakes. They piped icing out of tubes, cloth bags, and paper cones. They used star tips and tube tips for flowers and ribbons. Janie couldn't keep the pressure on her tube even, so that for every attractive flower, she had a pitiful plop of icing instead.
"Yours looks like a very faded bouquet," remarked her mother.
The instructor demonstrated flowers yet again. As Janie leaned forward to see the technique, she fell hideously into another daymare. The conscious part of her thought, "Am I falling into the cake? Will I be a pitiful fool in front of these women, my face covered with icing?" The daymare was white. White flowers, white whipped cream, white ice cream. The pretty woman, the whirling stool at the counter, and white shoes. Tiny, shiny, white shoes.
We were shoe shopping, thought Janie. But who is we? Who am I?
Now you try, said the instructor, putting the tube in her hand. Janie struggled to make a flower, but there was no white icing in the tube. There was a thin line of blue gel instead. She stared at the demonstration cake and saw that while she had been lost in a dreadful white dream, they had changed from flowers to writing. Her hand shook. She tried to write "Happy Birthday."
What was the birth date on the carton? She thought. When was Jenny Spring's birthday? Is it mine?
Chapter 4. She slept soundly. If she dreamed, she didn't remember when she awoke.
How strange, thought Janie.
You'd think if anything would give me nightmares, it would be this. She got out of bed. Janie loved nightwear. Sometimes she was in a pajama mood, and she had flannel pajamas, silk shorty pajamas, and sweet cotton and lace pajamas. Sometimes she preferred nightgowns, and she had everything from bridal trousseau-type gowns to teddies. But recently, she had gotten into sweatshirt stuff. This new gown was a soft pearl gray, like a sweatshirt to the floor. She peeled the gown up and over her head and stared at herself, naked in the mirror. She liked her body. Morning sun streamed in the window. It caught on the prisms Janie had been given for some elementary school science project and never taken down from their plastic strings. Miniature rainbows danced across the walls. She held out her hand and caught one in her palm. On the desk was a spray of reference books given her over various Christmases and rarely touched. The dictionary was a huge dark blue Webster's. She looked up nightmare. From Middle English, nit, night. An Anglo-Saxon mare, demon. Then she looked up daydream, a pleasant, dreamy thought. Below it, there actually was a word, daymare, defined as a nightmare taking place in the day. Demon, thought Janie. That's what it was. Some demon, some goblin or troll, forcing a daymare on me. In school, the boys were particularly sophomoric. Janey adored mischief, if she could watch rather than participate. She was perfectly willing to cheer the boys on as long as she ran no risk of getting punished along with them. Pete had a huge roll of masking tape left over from an art project. All the kids were attracted by the tape. Everybody wanted to rip off a piece and tape things together. "We could tape Sarah Charlotte's mouth shut," said Jason, laughing, ready to do it. "Tape the trash barrel lids closed so nobody can throw anything away," Adair suggested. "Or tape Ellen Winter's braids to her back." Nobody liked Ellen Winter. Nobody ever had. Nobody ever would. The poor thing would have nobody to untape her.
"No, let's tape Janie's hair down," cried Jason. "At last, I'll have breathing space during lunch. We'll just wind the whole roll around her forehead until her hair is finally under control."
Janey shrieked with mixed horror and delight, protecting her head with her arms. She considered whether to yank her sweater up over her hair and run screaming down the halls. Sarah Charlotte shuddered, imagining this fate.
"You'd never get it off. When we pulled the tape away, we'd scalp her. You sadist. Somebody lock this boy up. He's sick and twisted."
"I like that in a person," said Adair.
"I know," said Pete. "Let's tape all the desks together."
"Let's what?"
"Let's go into the 9th grade wing. They're all at lunch. We'll turn every desk inward and tape them together. When they get back from lunch, they won't be able to get their chairs under the desks."
"Ooh, that's a great idea," said Sarah Charlotte. "What a gift from us to them. Think how they'll waste a whole period trying to untape desks."
There was a silence while each debated whether the pleasure would be worth the pain, if they got caught, or whether they'd rather just sit there and have lunch, or if they'd be wimps if they didn't follow through on it now. Adair, who was going for her driver's test the following Monday, and who carried her driver's ed book with her everywhere, wasn't interested.
"Don't let's do that," she begged. "Somebody test me on stopping distance instead."
Janey flipped the book open and read aloud the questions on stopping distances. Adair got them all right. She had the entire book memorized.
"I'm so afraid I'll forget something when I go for my test," said Adair. "What if they won't give me my license just because I didn't remember to bring my birth certificate?"
"Then we'd know what a dumbbell you are," said Jason. "If you're that dumb, you don't deserve your brownie. So give me your dessert."
Janie's body turned to ice. "I have no more control over my temperature than I do over my daymares," thought Janey. She said, "You have to have a birth certificate to get a driver's license, Adair?" Now her interior betrayed her. All the organs in her chest and abdomen shuddered and rippled. "I don't want to know," thought Janey. Because why? Does something deep inside me know already? But why now? Why haven't I known all along? How could you forget something like your real family and the moment you were taken from them? I know I'm making it up. It's a demon. The dictionary says so. So why am I turning cold with fear? 3 forms of identification, said Adair. I'm bringing my birth certificate, which you have to have, my social security card, and my passport. Jason laughed suddenly.
"I remember the first time I saw my birth certificate," he said, "with its little raised seal and the gold lettering at the top, and it was so official and all. The real me. And it had the wrong birth date. I practically passed out. I thought, I'm somebody else. I'm adopted. They switched babies at the hospital. I sweated so much the paper got soggy."
Janie's mouth was so dry she couldn't ask questions. "It turns out," Jason explained, his voice rich with relief, "that there are 2 dates, the day you were born and the day they register you on the records, which in my case was several days later.
My eyes landed on the wrong date.
Janie seemed to melt, like ice cream in the sun. She had no energy left, hardly even a mind. She pictured road surfaces in winter, ripped into potholes and heaves by the changing temperatures. Ice one day, sunny thaw the next. Would the changing temperatures of her imagination rip through her, too? She had never seen an insane person. They don't mean to go insane, thought Janie. It happens to their surface, like freeze and thaw. She had a sense that she must hold on to her sanity, the way in a crowd in the city you held on to your purse, that it would take both hands to stay sane. Reeve didn't give her a ride home. She took the bus. It stopped at the corner. She had a block to walk. Theirs was an architecturally mixed neighborhood. Originally a street of substantial older houses with front porches, big attics, and trees that dumped a million leaves every autumn, each side lot had been built upon. Modern ranches and cute little Cape Cods lay between each brown-shingled old place. Her own house was an old one, dramatically modernized with sheets of glass where once there had been dark, hidden rooms. Janie walked through mountains of leaves in the gutter, waiting for the town crew to come with a frightening leaf vacuum that sucked and then minced the scarlet and gold leaves. She had never been able to watch it. She went in the side door. "Mom?" she yelled. "In here, dear." Her mother was at her desk. Lists, folders, notations, all the stuff for her various causes and crusades. "How was school, darling?" "Oh, you know, school." "I had a great day," said her mother happily. "My Laotian boy, he's really made a quantum leap. He's not going to need me much longer." Her mother tutored English as a second language. The Laotian boy had one interest, and one only: sports. He wanted his terms straight, so he wouldn't refer to baskets or goals for a baseball game. "Mom," said Janie, keeping her voice light, "I'm going to need my birth certificate for getting my driver's license. Can I see it now?" Her mother's pencil stopped moving on the form she was filling out. It seemed to Janie that her mother's knuckles tightened and whitened. Her mother said, "Darling, you won't be eligible for months." "I know, but Adair's been talking about it, and I got interested." "It's in the safe deposit box at the bank," said her mother. "Oh, well, then let's go open it." "I'm very busy, darling." "Let's go tomorrow, then." "Tomorrow's Saturday," said her mother quickly. "The bank's not open." Janie felt like an executioner, escorting her own mother to the guillotine. "Monday, then," said Janie. Her mother said, "Jane Elizabeth Johnson, you don't give your mother orders, do you hear me? You may ask courteously, but you may not command." "Why don't you want me to see my birth certificate?" said Janie. Her mother turned a page in her notebook and stared at the blank paper. "Don't be ridiculous, Janie. Now let's have a snack. What do you feel like? I did a huge grocery shopping, new microwave and frozen stuff we haven't tried yet, and fruit juice popsicles for you instead of ice cream." "She doesn't want me to see my birth certificate," thought Janie. "Because there isn't one? Because the dates are wrong, or because she isn't in the mood to bother with the bank?" In the kitchen, Janie looked in the bread box and passed on donuts, fresh onion bagels, and raspberry coffee cake. She checked the shelves, but didn't feel like opening double-stuffed Oreos or Malomars. She wasn't in the mood for strawberry vanilla yogurt or leftover pizza in the refrigerator. "I knew all along my snack would be in the freezer," she remarked. But her mother hadn't come in with her. Janie turned slowly, looking around the empty room. Always, after school, if her mother was home, the two of them shared snacks, discussed their day, opened the mail together. Her mother not only remained in her study, she had even shut the door.
Janie jerked open the freezer. Cold air bathed her cheeks. There was a quart of Wildberry Ripple ice cream, flavor of the month for her father. From the shelf, she took her favorite bowl, a Peter Rabbit bowl she had had.
Since when? Thought Janie. All my life? Or since I was...
She wrenched her mind away from it. From the utensil drawer, she took the ice cream scoop. It was old, with a wooden handle now split from many runs through the dishwasher. The scoop itself was pitted with age. Like a painting from the bottom up, another kitchen emerged in her brain. She saw the floor first, toys on it, yellow linoleum. She saw the legs of chairs next, and the legs of grown-ups. Then a tabletop. It was at eye level. She was the height of the table. Janie panted like a child having an asthma attack. She could barely keep her balance. The painting grew, gathering color and detail. Not a large room. Messy. Two screaming babies, each in a high chair. The apron. That white canvas apron with the pocket of candy. A bag of Wonder Bread. She could remember the wrapper. Her voice asking for milk. But nobody heard her over the screaming of the babies, so Janie got it herself, spilling a puddle. She could remember mopping it up with a paper towel, proud of herself for making the mess and for unmaking it. She remembered being scooped up, hugged. Laughter, noise, mess, commotion. The kitchen in which she really stood was large, smooth, and empty. The counters and shelves pounded in her head, like cartoon things taking on life and rhythm. Abandoning the quart of Wildberry Ripple, Janie ran outside. Reeve was raking leaves in his yard.
"Hi," he said. "Come to help? I've got an extra rake. It's time you earned your keep, woman."
He grinned. His face was rather long and narrow, and the grin was a surprise, because it took up so much space. You were socked with joy when Reeve smiled at you. A French-looking beret tilted on his hair. He was thigh-deep in leaves.
"I've got to mow the lawn again," he explained. "That grass went and grew some more. I don't know how, under a foot of leaves. Here, rake, Janie. I need you."
She took the rake. Energy spilled out of her like oil from a smashed tanker. Leaves were flung into the air. She made immense, immediate progress. Reeve stared at her. She raked on and on, until the leaves were a mountain in front of her, and the lawn a green swarm behind her. Without catching himself, Reeve fell backward into the leaf pile and sank toward the ground, brown leaves sliding over his face and chest.
"Janie? You have a problem? Come tell Uncle Reeve."
He sprawled comfortably. The leaves crackled with every breath he took. She sat next to him, cross-legged, looking down into his face. They were in a nest, hidden from the adult world. There was nothing like a pile of leaves to make you feel little again.
"Reeve, do you think 800 numbers can trace a call? I mean, if you called an 800 number and didn't say anything, could they find out what phone you called from?"
"I take it you're not going to call Time Magazine for a subscription," said Reeve, laughing. "Who are you calling? The Secret Service to report an assassination attempt?"
How did he get so close? She thought. Does he know something too? Deep down, without admitting it, does he remember? He would have been 7. I would have been 5.
"I thought I'd call the Milk Council to find out about new research on milk allergies," she said.
Reeve shouted with laughter.
"Oh, boy! They'll really want to trace that call, Jane Elizabeth. They'll figure they've got an escaped drug-running Central American dictator on the phone for sure when you ask about milk allergies.
He laughed and laughed, put both hands around her, and pulled her down into the leaves with him. Chapter 5. The kiss was long and serious. Serious like my hair, thought Janie. She stared amazed at Reeve's cheek, which was pressed against hers, and with amazement brought her lips together to kiss him again, to start the second kiss, and to choose when to end it. She could feel his heart racing and then felt her own pick up speed and run with his. Very slowly her hands crept around his face, finding the back of his neck where his hair lay thick over the pulse. His hand, rough-surfaced, gently touched her face, moved her hair away. With the pad of his thumb, he traced her profile.
"Reeve!" shouted his mother from the house. "Reeve, where are you? Phone call, it's Michael."
They fell apart, each lying back on crinkly leaves, staring at the sky. Reeve said,
Michael probably wants to know if, well, I better talk to him.
"Okay," said Janie. She stood up first and began dusting the leaves off herself. She could feel leaf bits in her hair and down the back of her sweater. Reeve's eyes fixed on her hair, and he moved as if to brush the leaves away for her, but then he looked down at his feet instead, mumbling, "See you," and ran into the house. Janie's heart and lungs were working as if they were trying to power a city's electricity. She picked up the rake again. Their two bodies had left prints on the leaf pile, like angels in the snow. She raked the pile back together until the prints were hidden and the evidence gone. Reeve didn't come back from his phone call. The sun went behind clouds, and she was cold. She went inside, remembering the ice cream on the counter and wondering if it had melted everywhere, but her mother had put it away.
"That showed discipline, Janie," her mother complimented her, "to get exercise instead of indulging in forbidden foods."
An I've got a secret smile spread on her mother's face.
"Look," she said, "I've been practicing. What do you think of it?"
From the refrigerator she took a large rectangular pan covered with aluminum foil, which Janie had thought was lasagna. Peeling back the foil, her mother showed off a sheet cake. The cake was iced in white, with purple piping on the sides, and a cute little purple football arching over purple goalposts in the center. "Tomorrow we're all driving up to the university for the football game," said her mother. "I'm doing dessert. Usually I go to the bakery and order lots of chocolate surprises, but this time I thought I'd do a cake. What do you think of it?"
"It's so cute," cried Janie. "Look, you even have the little team over here, painted in gel. And here's a cheerleader. Mom, I love her pom-poms. How did you do it?"
Each year they went for a tailgate picnic along with Reeve's family and Sarah Charlotte's. "The football game," she thought. "I'll be with Reeve tomorrow. All day." Her heart raced.
"I was in a Grandma Moses mood," explained her mother. "I decided to do a primitive painting in purple tube art on a cake." They giggled.
For the first time in her life, Janie regretted that Sarah Charlotte would be along with her eagle eyes and endless chatter.
"I just hope the cake is edible," said her mother. "I haven't baked a cake in 100 years. I use Duncan Hines mix, though, so I'm probably safe."
"There's no way to taste test," agreed Janie, "unless we cut off the goalposts and eat them tonight."
"Bite your tongue. This took me the entire day, Janie."
"My goodness, what's in your hair?"
"Leaves," said Janie. "I went out to help Reeve rake, and he got silly and we fell over in the leaf pile, like a pair of third graders."
with Janie sitting on a kitchen chair and her mother standing behind her. She brushed and brushed till the red hair was full of static and the floor covered with tiny brown bits of leaf. Janie thought of Reeve. Those leaves on the floor might be the only souvenir of her only kisses. When he ran away to take Michael's phone call, had he also been running away from the kiss he had given Janie? "I think I'll do my weekend homework tonight," said Janie, "since the football game will take all day Saturday." She took back her hairbrush and went upstairs to be alone with the memory of Reeve and his lips and his rough, soft hand. Usually she passed her so-called homework hours on the phone with Sarah Charlotte or Adair. There were also Gretchen, Doria, and Michelle to call if Sarah Charlotte's and Adair's phones were busy. Janie was almost overcome with the desire to talk about Reeve. "He kissed me. He pulled me down in the leaves, like somebody in a romance novel where the man is so frantic with passion he pulls her off the horse or out of the carriage and onto the bed. You should have been there. It was incredible." However, Sarah Charlotte, who liked things nailed down on all four sides, would demand, "So, did he ask you out? Are you dating? What kind of commitment did you get from him?" So she wouldn't call Sarah Charlotte, and maybe not Adair either, because Adair would hate the part about getting leaves in her hair. Adair was against anything messy. Janie sighed and opened her book bag, dumping the contents on her bed. She never studied at her desk. She used the desktop for her cassette collection. Her cheap blue cloth three-ring notebook fell out on top of the math, biology, American lit, and world history books. It was the kind you wrote on in ballpoint pen, tic-tac-toe games, interlocked initials, and assorted doodles. Janie opened the cover. The back of the flattened milk carton stared up at her. Flour Dairy. The dairy that cares. 100% whole milk. 1/2 pint. She unclipped it, turned it over. Jenny Spring looked up at her. The 800 number was like a dart being thrown into her eyes. "I could call," she thought. "I could ask." But what could she ask? All the questions were unthinkable. Besides, what would it do to her parents to find out their very own daughter was calling the authorities to announce she had been kidnapped? Her mother, who had spent the day baking a special cake and was too tired to consider going to the bank, her father, who would come home from soccer full of victory or deflated by loss. Janie picked up her phone. She dialed 1. She dialed 800. She dialed 34672. She was gasping for breath. With 2 digits to go, she hung up. She missed the phone. It clattered, slid off the bed and hit the floor with a crash as loud as trains colliding. But her mother didn't yell upstairs to see if Janie was hurt. Up here it was the world crashing in. Downstairs, nobody had heard a sound. "All right. Get a grip on yourself," thought Janie. "The dictionary is right. These are inspired by a demon. You have to destroy the demon. Or maybe it's just premenstrual syndrome." Except she had never previously had trouble before, during, or after her periods. "I will think about Reeve now," she ordered herself, glaring at the inner demon. "I will think of kisses and love and dating." But she thought of Jenny Spring. Of parents somewhere in New Jersey who missed their little girl so much that all these years later they were still hoping, hoping by the thinnest thread they would somehow find their Jenny again, and Jenny would be safe, not murdered or raped or abused, or happy and ignorant with another family. This, thought Janie, must be what heavy drugs are like. Hallucinations, whether you want them or not, temperature-changing, personality-changing doses. This time she dialed Sarah Charlotte. Busy. Then Adair. Adair had total phone and gave Janie 20 seconds of her time. She was on the phone with Pete, who, she said, seemed to be on the verge of asking her out. "Then what did you answer my call for?" demanded Janie. "You might have cut him off at the moment he got the courage together." "Normal persons," said Adair, "can never resist a phone call." She disconnected to go back to Pete. Janie called Michelle, who didn't have total phone. The phone rang twice. Somebody picked it up. Janie disconnected immediately. "Rude," thought Janie. "Why'd I do that?" "Because I can't talk to Michelle about anything. If I told Michelle about Reeve, the next day the whole school would think Reeve asked me to marry him. If I told Michelle about the milk carton, the whole school would know that I actually believe I was kidnapped. Guidance department would hear the rumors. They'd summon my mother from her bloodmobile. Your daughter's hoping you're not her parents. Your daughter is planning to call the FBI on you. Your daughter is living in a sick, twisted, perverted daydream in which—" Her body vibrated with a queer, frightening energy, as if she could have run all the way to New Jersey to that shopping center. "What if I can't get this horrible idea out of my brain?" she thought. "What if it sits there and grows like some terrible egg, splitting open and turning into something real?" Chapter 6. In separate cars, the Johnsons, the Shieldses, and the Sherwoods drove upstate to the football game. "Please let me drive," Janie begged her parents. "Sarah Charlotte's family is letting her drive because she needs highway practice, and Reeve gets to drive the whole way."
"Reeve's had his license an entire year," said her father. "And Sarah Charlotte's been practicing longer than you have."
"I've never driven on the highway," said Janie. "Please, please, please. This is a perfect day to start. Lots of sunshine, no rain, no ice on the roads, no summer people traffic."
"All right," said her mother nervously.
"Certainly not," said her father.
Old times. Progressive mother, conservative father. Janie waited for the debate to commence, and for them to meet in the middle. They would probably let her drive part of the way.
"Oh, all right," said her father. "I keep not wanting to believe you're going to be 16 soon. I don't like the year 16.
Janie giggled and took the keys from her mother's hand. Her parents clicked their seat belts firmly, as if to say, "We're sure going to need them this time."
"Have faith," said Janie reproachfully.
"Take off the parking brake," said her father.
"I was going to, Daddy. You just didn't give me time." She backed perfectly out of the driveway. Not only did Reeve come out his door in time to see her drive, but so did his older sister, Lizzie. Lizzie wasn't one of Janie's favorite people. Lizzie had occasionally babysat for Janie in the past, but not because she liked kids. Lizzie rarely did anything except for the money. Lizzie was supposed to be safely in law school now, being as brilliant there as she had been in Princeton. Janie didn't consider Lizzie's absence a loss to the neighborhood. How annoying to see Lizzie home. It would certainly tense Reeve up. Even from the far end of the driveway, Janie could see how straight Lizzie's spine was, how intense her face, how determined her jaw. It seemed unlike Lizzie to come home for a mere football game. Lizzie was opposed to frivolous waste of time. Lizzie was also opposed to Reeve, and had been all their lives. But there was a silver lining to this. Reeve would be very eager to go off with Janie. She wanted to wave to Reeve, but wasn't coordinated enough to change gears, aim the car, miss the curb, and wave all at the same time. Reeve didn't act as if Lizzie had crushed him yet. He leaped around like a demented boy cheerleader, signaling with both arms and screaming syllables she couldn't hear.
"Look out for that car up there," said her mother.
"You're following too closely," said her father.
"Please," cried her mother, "not over 25.
They were gripping the seats, the belts, and the armrests with white knuckles.
"How am I doing?" said Janie happily.
She loved driving. The power of it. Even diluted by her mother and father's panic, power filled her body. She, Janie, controlled destination, speed, passing, radio volume, and stopping time. She felt as if she had been born to drive, as if car designers had molded the driver's seat just for her. She loved checking the rearview mirror and watching the brake lights ahead of her and reading the route numbers on road signs. For Janie, it was a perfect hour and a half. However, Reeve and Sarah Charlotte, permitted to drive normal speeds like real drivers, had arrived first. When the Johnsons reached the designated parking lot for tailgate picnics, Sarah Charlotte and Reeve stood on the pavement shouting, "You'll never be able to park it! Jinx, jinx! Try steering, woman!" She parked perfectly. "So there," she said to her parents. Her mother said, "This is an excellent weight loss program. I'm sure I'm 5 pounds thinner than I was when I left home."
"You'll put it all back on eating your own picnic," said her father, dragging out the leg of lamb, the wine, the wild rice, and the sheet cake with the footballs. And that was just what the Johnsons had brought. Reeve's mother had a ham, and Sarah Charlotte's mother had all the classics. Potato salad, coleslaw, macaroni salad, and fried chicken. The weather was wonderful. Sweater weather. In the shelter of their three cars, they ate till forced to rest their stomachs.
"We'll need a tow lift to get us up into the stadium," joked Janie's father, who had had lamb, ham, and fried chicken.
Janie's mother played with the aluminum foil, hiding the sheet cake, while Lizzie discussed the constitutional law cases she was now analyzing.
"If Lizzie laughs at my cake," Janie's mother whispered to her.
"Or at you," Janie murmured back.
"We'll murder her," breathed Janie's mother.
"But then we'd need a lawyer," whispered Janie. "And we'd just have gotten rid of the only one around."
They giggled. Mr. Sherwood thought the kids should go away and explore the campus before dessert, thus giving the adults some peace.
"We're not babies anymore," said Sarah Charlotte irritably, "needing our diapers changed and our bottles heated."
"No, but you talk a lot more," said her father, "and we'd like our own conversation without you, okay? But I still love you. Kind of."
Sarah Charlotte made a face, claiming this lukewarm parental love meant she deserved her own car, insurance paid, and gas supplied, of course.
"Uh-huh," said her father dryly.
Reeve turned to his sister, grinning.
"Come on, Lizzie," he teased. "They want the kids to leave, so they can have a mature conversation."
"I am the only one here who will bother with a mature conversation," said Lizzie. "They just want to gossip."
She took a chicken leg, leaned back, and said to Janie's father, "Your turn, Frank." Janie tried to imagine one day calling her friend's parents by their first names, failed, and fled with Reeve and Sarah Charlotte. They wandered around the campus, talking about what college would be like.
"If I get in," said Reeve gloomily,
and how they yearned to live in dorms and be away from the confining rules of their parents. Janie was lying. College terrified her. There was nothing she wanted less than to live on her own. The harsh glass and steel dorms the freshmen had didn't look as if they could ever be home to anybody. They looked like cages for loneliness. Imagine 5,000 freshmen you had never met.
Reeve said, "My parents and guidance think I should take a postgraduate year, repeat some of my high school subjects to get better grades, and then go on to college."
"How humiliating," remarked Sarah Charlotte.
"You're supposed to tell me nobody would notice," said Reeve.
"Of course they'd notice. It would be like staying back," said Sarah Charlotte, who wasn't sensitive. "Jordan Feingold and Linda Lang stayed back in second grade, and I never see them without remembering that."
"How comforting," said Reeve.
Janey wanted to hold his hand, the one whose thumb had drawn itself so lightly down her nose, bumping over her lips, landing on her chin. But she couldn't tell if Reeve was interested in this or not. He was full of energy. She and Sarah Charlotte were sloths compared to Reeve, stumbling in his wake. They had excellent seats, 6 rows up, left of center. Janey mostly watched the cheerleaders, who were heavy on gymnastics. They had tiny trampolines and were endlessly catapulting off each other's shoulders. She particularly liked how one tiny cheerleader with flowing golden hair stood on the palms of a boy cheerleader who could hold her easily at his own shoulder level. With some ceremony, Mrs. Johnson opened her sheet cake for admiration and cut it up to serve during the second quarter. They ate it with their fingers, getting icing all over themselves and licking their fingers clean because nobody had remembered napkins.
"Let me have another piece," said Reeve, nudging his hip bone into Janie's.
"You had 2 already," she said.
"I'm cold. Don't move away."
He didn't move away. She cut another square for him, and something gave her the courage to feed it to him, bite by bite. His lips and tongue touched her fingers with every bite. Neither of them saw the second half of the game. They were both startled to find it had ended. People were on their feet. Sarah Charlotte was saying, "We won, you two. You want me to write out the details so you'll feel as if you were here?" Sarah Charlotte spent the night at Janie's. They rented movies. Comedies they had seen before and knew they'd like. Sarah Charlotte grilled Janey at great length about Reeve, analyzing the leaf pile and the football game.
"He loves you," said Sarah Charlotte.
"You don't have to sound so irritable about it," said Janey.
"I didn't want to be the one left behind. Pete asked Adair out, and here's Reeve literally eating out of your hand. And who is there for me? Nobody."
This led to the always pleasant activity of ripping apart the personalities of boys who had displayed no interest in Sarah Charlotte. They slept late, and their sole activity in the morning was reading the Sunday comics. Monday morning in Spanish, the teacher passed out information on a winter vacation trip she was chaperoning to Spain. "Anybody who wants to may go," she said. "First come, first serve."
"Ooh, let's,"
breathed Sarah Charlotte, nudging Janey. "If you have any thoughts of going at all, and you don't yet have a passport, you need to apply immediately," said the teacher. "It can take months. You need your birth certificate and another piece of identification to get one." "The bank is open today," thought Janey. In English, they got back their corrected essays. Janey got a B. "Sweet sense of humor," Mr. Brilo wrote, "although not what I had in mind." At the top of the page, he had circled Jane Johnstone, adding, "Janey, you having an identity crisis?" At lunch, Janey got a wrist flick from Reeve, nothing more. She thought, "He's not ready. Or maybe not even thinking about doing anything public." She wondered what stages you went through to reach the moment when you could speak to each other in front of your friends, or refer to each other, admitting, "I like him."
"I thought he was going to ask you out," said Sarah Charlotte sadly. "Janie, he's so adorable with that moppy hair."
"He needs a decent haircut," agreed Janie. She didn't commit herself to anything more. She opened her lemonade carton. The rest opened their milks. She looked at Jason's milk. There was a different child on the carton. A boy. Nobody mentioned him. Nobody referred to Janie's claim last week to have been the kidnappee. As far as Janie could tell, nobody even remembered. Not even Sarah Charlotte. Adair had everybody's attention, having skipped first period class to go to the Motor Vehicle Bureau for her driver's test. Flushed and proud, she displayed her brand new license. Everybody politely agreed that she was recognizable in the photo, although she wasn't. Nobody ever was. Adair wanted to show off her driving skills. Everybody, she insisted, had to be passengers in her car and go to the mall that afternoon. "You coming, Janie?" said Adair, more excited than Adair ever allowed herself to be. Janie hadn't known that Adair's smooth finish, shiny as shellac, was an achievement Adair worked for. But Janie wanted to go to the bank, not the mall. She said by way of excuse, "I'll have to call my mother and ask."
"Janie, you're still not allowed out by yourself?" teased Jason.
"Her mother is the strictest woman on earth," said Sarah Charlotte.
"How come?" Jason wanted to know. "What terrible history do you have, Jane Johnson?"
Chapter 7. She came home to an empty house. Mondays were hospital volunteer days for her mother. Her father would be coaching at the middle school until dark. When did the bank close? Janie went into her mother's study. She had a vague idea of finding the key to the safe deposit box and going to the bank herself. The desk had two deep file drawers. The upper one was crammed with volunteer-related materials, all her mother's committees, boards, and causes. Girl Scouts, that was ancient history. Hospital volunteers, literacy volunteers, Nature Conservancy Board. Janie had never even heard of this one. Parent-Teacher Association. In alphabetical order, the files went on and on. There was something very reassuring about those files, full of her mother's time and energy and caring. Paper memories of meetings, fundraisers, and suburban routines that made the world a better place to live in. The frightening daymares of last week hadn't come back. Janie was more irritated than anything else, wanting to set aside the milk carton idea. Driver's licenses and passports were of much greater importance. If she could just see the birth certificate, she could extricate herself from this dumb idea. In the bottom drawer would be files marked bills, income tax, insurance forms. The bottom drawer was locked. She found the lock strangely frightening. Her mother didn't lock up jewelry, nor silver. So why lock a file drawer? What robber would care about her last year's bills? No key was mixed in the pile of paper clips and index tabs lying in the shallow pencil drawer. Upstairs, Janie changed into old jeans and a sweatshirt. She found herself checking corners of her room for reassurance. Yes, her T-shirt collection was intact. Yes, her bumper sticker collection was still in its shoebox. Yes, her Barbie dolls still lay silent in their carrying case at the back of the closet. "I should put them all in the attic," she thought. "They're clutter. I want my room to be more streamlined than it is." The attic. Boxes and trunks.
Whenever they went up those dark stairs for things like Christmas decorations, Janie would ask what was in those boxes gathering dust in the corners.
Junk,
her mother always replied. Someday we'll toss it. Now it occurred to Janie that her mother, everybody's favorite chairwoman, was supremely organized. If she had intended to toss it, or if it really were junk, it would never have gone into the attic. She would have donated it to the Salvation Army. Janie opened the door to the attic stairs. Cold drafts, like winter coming, sifted down on her face like dust. The roof creaked. She climbed the stairs. I've never been up here alone, she thought suddenly. If I ever needed my old Halloween costumes or my last year's winter boots, Mom went up for them. At the bottom of the stairs, the draft made the door shut. Janie whirled when it slammed. Her heart was pounding. She crept down the stairs in case it was an intruder. Of course, it was nothing. Putting books on each side of the door to hold it open, she went back up. The attic was poorly lit. The previous owners had remodeled the kitchen, dining room, and bathrooms, but nobody had done anything up here, not even dust. The attic felt as old as time. Eaves ran down toward the floor and made dark corners. On most boxes, her mother's neat handwriting spelled out the contents. J. Handmade sweaters. Janie smiled and opened that one. The sick scent of mothballs filled the attic. Child sizes long outgrown. The sweaters reeked of memory as well as mothballs. A Christmas tree sweater, cream and green, brought back third grade in a rush of sound and color. That Christmas they'd gone to Disney World. She'd needed the sweater. It was cold in Orlando that year. She remembered sitting in the whirling teacup with her parents, clinging to her father's chest, shrieking in delight and dizziness. Billy Wadler, a big, mean fourth grader, had teased her mercilessly all January about wearing a Christmas tree sweater. Billy Wadler had grown up into a really terrific guy. He took out his aggressions in sports now and was nice to girls. Sarah Charlotte had always yearned for Billy. Janie smiled and closed the cardboard box. It was hard to interfold the four cardboard pieces as neatly as her mother had done. She coughed from the mothballs. The next box said F, ski boots. Her father, Frank. She hadn't known her father skied. Maybe they'd do that this winter, she'd ask. She wondered why he'd given it up. Too expensive? Too dangerous? The whole quest was beginning to feel quite silly. What a good thing that she hadn't explained anything to Sarah Charlotte, nor asked anything of her mother. Up against the very back, hidden by two neatly stacked rows of cardboard boxes, old jigsaw puzzles and fishing equipment, a black trunk had been pushed. She remembered the fishing equipment birthday. Her father had gone out twice, but he wasn't the fisherman type. He disliked solitary sports. How disappointed he had been when his only daughter preferred a social life to soccer. She was smiling when she reached the black trunk. Probably my baby clothes, she thought. If Mom saved all my sweaters, I bet she saved all my baby clothes. It was such a nice thought. Janie could hardly wait to see them. Eensy, sweet, smocked things she loved to look at in stores. The trunk was big and cheap. The sort you bought from Sears or Montgomery Ward. Metal trim now tarnished. It was locked. A label was taped to the top. A single letter was written on it. H. Who was H? Her mother was Miranda, her father Frank. She was Jane. None of the four grandparents had been an H either. An old Christmas tree holder, three splayed feet and a cup for the trunk, lay gathering cobwebs.
Janie wedged its metal foot behind the long, narrow lock plate of the trunk and yanked. The lock broke.
How old it must be, thought Janie. It's rusted through.
She lifted the heavy lid carefully, tilting it back against the wall. The trunk was filled with papers and photographs. She was immediately bored. Old school reports, old term papers, old fill-in-the-blank maps and quizzes. Somebody named Hannah. She had never heard of anybody named Hannah. How could an unknown Hannah merit this stack of attention? Janie felt irritable and coughed again from the dust and the mothballs. Beneath a sixth-grade report on the beginning of mankind, Mesopotamia, and a sheaf of mimeographed maps where Hannah had wrongly penciled in Germany on France, was a school photograph. Janie recognized the cardboard folder immediately, the kind that offered your parents 6 different purchase agreements, so many wallet sizes, so many 8x10s. She flipped open to see what Hannah looked like. A pretty girl, perhaps 12 or 13, looked back at her. Sweet, blonde, mild. The kind Sarah Charlotte would refer to as a used rag doll.
Not much stuffing in that one,
Sarah Charlotte liked to say of girls who were short on personality. The dust was annoying Janie's lungs. It would be the pits if it turned out she had a dust allergy along with a milk allergy. How would she survive in this world if everything made her choke and cough? From behind all the papers, a little piece of fabric stuck up. White cloth. Tiny, dark polka dots. With hands of ice, Janie plucked at the material, shifting the layers of school papers until she could pull it up. It was the dress on the milk carton. Chapter 8. For supper, her mother had made a pot roast with potatoes, turnips, onions, and a rich, dark, thick gravy. Janie had no appetite. The smell, which ordinarily would have brought her into the kitchen with her father, moaning and clutching at things, pretending starvation and deprivation, made her ill. She ate nothing. "Janie, honey, don't you feel well?" She shook her head. "I'm fine." "What can I fix you, then?" said her mother. "Would you rather have soup and toast?"
"I'd rather have a McDonald's cheeseburger," said Janie. "I hate this old-fashioned, heavy-duty mom-in-the-kitchen stuff with gravy."
It was like stabbing her mother. She had to look away from the hurt on her face. "My child of this century," her mother struggled to make a joke out of it. "Pizza Hut is better than my chicken pot pie, and McDonald's cheeseburger beats out my pot roast." Her father had seconds and then thirds to make his wife feel better. He complimented her extravagantly on the texture and flavor of the gravy. Janie knew they were waiting for her to take the initiative and apologize, so they didn't have to tell her to.
"How was school?" said her father.
"Oh, you know, school." Her father drew a long breath.
"We had a great practice. I can't wait for the next game. Lincoln Middle School graduated all its competition, so we ought to slaughter 'em.
Janie, I want you to come. You haven't seen my team play yet."
"How about coming to tomorrow's game?"
He was as eager as a little boy to show off his team. "I could put an ad in the Sunday classifieds down there in New Jersey," thought Janie. "What could I say? Need more details. Describe Jenny Spring. Who is Hannah?" But that would give those New Jersey parents hope that I exist, that I'm out here, and I miss them, and I want them. I exist, but I don't want different parents. I like everything exactly the way it is. How can I have a mother, or a father, or both?
that I don't miss and don't want. Am I some kind of monster? But now that I know they're out there, how can